Good afternoon, everybody. Welcome to the afternoon, July 2nd session of the Portland City Council. I believe we'll have a full complement of the council here, but let's call the roll, and you can amend it as we all arrive.
Saltzman?
Here.
Novick?
Here.
Fritz?
Here.
Fish? Hales?
Here. And I think we have the one item queued up. So, yep, just one. So if you'd go ahead and read that, we'll start the process.
Item 738, improve land use regulations related to accessory short-term rentals through the Regulatory Improvement Code Amendment Package 6.
Okay, well, good afternoon, everybody, and welcome to this hearing on the subject of short-term rentals. That one issue is the only item in this package of code amendments that we're still working on. That's obviously why everybody's here. This is a hearing continued from June 4th. And we also had a council work session, which is just an informal process where we have our staff and some resource people to try to work through the issues. We've queued up a whole bunch of potential amendments, which we're going to get to here in a moment. So our process is going to be that we're going to ask Sandra Wood from the Bureau of Planning and Sustainability to come up and walk us through a series of proposed amendments. The council will take a motion on those amendments, and we'll have them, therefore, on the table. You'll know what we're considering, which will be an amended version of the ordinance that was originally brought forward. So, obviously, if you want to testify, you'll be testifying about a changed package, and she'll, again, walk through what those changes are. Some of them are minor, and some of them are more important, but bear with us, and hopefully that will be clear. We're going to limit testimony to 2 minutes apiece just because we have so many people here, and we're going to give the first chance to testify to some folks who signed up for the June 4th hearing but then didn't get to testify. So we're going to, I think there are four or five people that fit that description, and they're going to get the first dibs at testifying this afternoon. And then we're going to ultimately at the end of the hearing vote on those amendments, which call balls and strikes on which ones we want to keep in the package. And then the plan is to bring the amended package back to the council on July 23rd with a final ordinance that reflects these amendments. So that's the plan as it now stands. So again, with that, let's call Sandra up to walk us through the materials in front of us and the proposed amendments. And then I believe Commissioner Fritz has a proposed additional amendment. Okay.
Great. Good afternoon. Thank you. I'm Sandra Wood with the Bureau of Planning and Sustainability. Thanks for having me again. And this is, as you said, a continuation of the hearing on June 4th and the work session that was held by Council last week. We're working off a memorandum dated June 30th, which includes the amendments that Council already has on the table and the additional ones you discussed at the work session. There's copies of the memorandum over there for members of the public. And do all members of the Commission have, of the Council have it?
Everybody got one?
Because okay. I have extras. Okay. So there are five amendments that we discussed at the work session last week, beginning with the first one regarding inspections. There are basically three options for the council to consider today. The first one is you already put a motion on the you actually already amended the Planning and Sustainability Commission's recommended draft. At the hearing on June 4th, you put the motion on the table and you voted affirmatively to amend the recommendation. And there, the motion was to require a BDS inspection for the initial permit, a self-certification for renewals every 2 years, and another BDS inspection at year 10 or with a change of ownership. That was introduced and that was voted on affirmatively. The second option, which was discussed at the work session, was to change that full inspection by BDS from every 10 years to every 6 years. So that's what the second option is. And, of course, you could move to not amend the Planning and Sustainability Commission's recommendation.
Which was, in that case, that the Bureau of Development Services conducts both the initial inspection and the subsequent inspections, right?
Exactly. Okay. Yep, and renewals every 2 years.
Okay.
I don't know if you all wanted to make a motion at this point or run through them all first.
That's the council's pleasure. I was assuming, perhaps, since you had this in memo form, that we might run through the whole package first and then perhaps be able to vote on them as a package or pull them out as needed. Any preferences here?
That would be easier, I think, okay. with a little discussion just to see how we get then an emotion and maybe, yeah.
Okay, let's try that. Let's try to do it as a package.
Okay, sounds good. So Amendment B is the carbon monoxide detector, which was introduced by Commissioner Saltzman on June 4th. And that's the code language is attached to that, which would, the motion was to require carbon monoxide detector in each bedroom. When we're inspecting it, we would check for that also.
And I think it would be appropriate, since it's a simple matter, for Commissioner Fritz to talk about her suggested friendly amendment.
The friendly amendment. BDS staff and Tom Bazo in my office noted that you wouldn't need a carbon monoxide detector if there was no potential source of carbon monoxide. So in state law, the carbon monoxide detectors are required when a source exists, a source such as a heater, a fireplace, appliance, cooking source that uses coal, kerosene, petroleum products, wood, or other fuels that emit carbon monoxide as a byproduct, or an attached garage with an opening that communicates directly with the living space. So my amendment is to add wear detector is required by law in 33207040A4C.
Okay, so just where it would otherwise be required, because that kind of combustion device was in the house, you have to have one in this case.
Okay, doesn't every house have a combustion source?
No, not if it has electric.
So I just wrapped my head around this issue when your staff brought it up. So my understanding is that if a house has all electric, furnace, water heater, electric, everything, no fireplace, and no attached garage, then they would not have a source of carbon monoxide and therefore not have to have the carbon monoxide detector. That's, and
is that correct?
That's correct, BDS tells me.
And then to clarify, do we want a detector in every bedroom or just on one on the floor where the bedrooms are located?
I think you're required to have a smoke detector in every bedroom, right?
Again, it's whatever the code would require, right?
So I think it's one carbon monoxide detector on the floor where the bedrooms are located.
So that's part of the amendment.
That's why you've crossed out in each bedroom.
Right.
Right, okay. So again, it's where it would be required by code. It would be required on each floor if there's a source of combustion in the house.
Correct.
Or a detached garage. Okay. Okay, so that's on the table as well. So let's keep going.
So Amendment C is about monitoring. This is not a change to the zoning code, but it's an amendment to the ordinance. And the motion was made on June 4th, and you voted affirmatively, which is to amend the ordinance directives to require that the Bureau of Planning and Sustainability return with a monitoring report by September of 2016. So that concludes what was already introduced on June 4th. There are two new amendments that you discussed at the work session last week, D and E. So D is how to define primary residence. And we have some code language attached in attachment D, and there's two options. You could move to require a resident to occupy the dwelling unit for at least 6 months or 185 days of the year, or you could move to require the resident to occupy the dwelling unit for at least 9 months, which is an attachment D, option two. And of course, you could move to not amend the planning and sustainability recommendation.
Okay.
The last amendment on this memo is the designees. At the work session, we talked about who can operate the short-term rental. And the idea here is that you could move to allow that the resident's designee operate a short-term rental. So they could operate it, they could hire a neighbor to operate it, their family member can operate, or they could hire a property management company or someone else to operate it. So that is a potential for a motion. Of course, you could also not amend the Planning and Sustainability's recommendation, which was that the resident is the operator. So those are the five amendments.
So you want to take those up now, and then we can move on to additional amendments after mm-hmm. that. So questions or discussion before we take a motion on the package of amendments as suggested by the Bureau, which again is in item A to require a BDS inspection for the initial permit, self-certification every 2 years, and another BDS inspection at year six or with a change of ownership. For the carbon monoxide detector, the amended language that Commissioner Fritz has proposed to require a carbon monoxide detector where required by law, and that is specifies both how many have to be in the unit and under what conditions. Monitoring, that one would be to require BDS to return by September of 2016 with a monitoring report. To define a primary residence as one in which the resident occupies the dwelling unit for at least 9 months of the year, and finally to allow a resident's designee to operate short-term rental and make those changes to the proposed code.
I move those amendments.
Okay, is there a second?
Mayor Hales.
Yes.
It's me. Hi. For purposes of clarification, you have already adopted amendments A, B, and C last
yes.
time. So I guess, in a sense, you need separate motions. One would be with Commissioner Fritz's amendment to item
right.
B, you need to move that amendment to your prior amendment
right,
to
right.
clarify that.
Okay.
And then you would need a separate motions for D and E. And I guess one question for you is, do you want to simply move and second the amendments now, allow people to testify, and then circle back and vote on them at the end?
Correct.
Okay.
Yeah. Okay. So, because we were going to vote on them at the end, I thought we could approve it as a package. But so you're saying we need to unbundle that?
I think, let's see. Well, the only amendments you need to actually adopt this time would be if there's no change to A and C, the amendments you would need to adopt this time at the end would be
okay.
the modification to B
yeah.
and D and E.
Okay. All right. So then the motion, I'll assume that Commissioner Fritz's motion is to adopt the amendments to items B, D, and E as further amended by today's discussion.
Absolutely. That's what I intended.
Okay. Thank you, Catherine, for telling us what we're doing. There is a second to that, I believe.
Yes.
And further discussion?
So the only issue that of the package is before us, before we get to other amendments, the only one that I would benefit from a little more conversation about is D, the difference between 6 months and 9 months, since there's a difference between whether it's your primary residence or how long you occupy the unit legally. And I just, if someone could give me a quick primer on that one.
Well, yeah, we should hear from staff, and then I suspect there'll be testimony on that
right.
question when we take testimony.
So the Planning and Sustainability Commission's recommendation is that a short-term rental is allowed in a primary residence. And so the question came up during the council hearing and during the work session is, how is primary residence defined? If I'm living at the house for how long do I need to live at the house for it to be considered the primary residence? So we had understood it when we wrote it as primary residence as being you're at the house the majority of the time, so at least 6 months. And what you all discussed at the work session was, is 6 months enough? Should it be 9 months or some other number? And even if it is 6 months, I think because it has garnered so much attention and we've all discussed it, I think it would be worthwhile taking out the term primary residence and just replacing it with what we are proposing in attachment D, which is it means the individual or family who operates accessory short-term rental is there for at least blank number of days during the calendar year, just to make it crystal clear.
And that's because we got some legal advice that you can declare something your primary residence under state law, and that doesn't turn on actually how long you live there?
Yeah, so we looked at tax codes, which is what you discussed also last week, and really the IRS doesn't have a statutory definition for that. The property that the homeowner uses a majority of the time during the year is considered during their discussions and decision makings. And key elements that the courts and the IRS have considered includes the voter registrations, where you pay local and state income tax, and the address on your driver's license. So they don't have a specific definition of this, how long you have to be there. They also use the term permanent residence. So you can be a permanent resident of Oregon and be away for the whole year somewhere, and Oregon is still considered your permanent residence and you're paying your taxes here. State of Oregon also, the definition doesn't help us out very much. It says it means the state jurisdiction or physical location where a a person lives during any 12-month period more than he or she lives anywhere else during that period. So in thinking about this, I think we've concluded that this reinforces why primary residence isn't a good indicator of how long someone needs to be in the residence.
There's a lot of people that are here today were not with us in the work session, just to put a finer point on it. The young woman who testified the last time we had a hearing that she lived in one house and rented out another house. If we were to take the 9-month rule, then she would only be able to rent out that other house for 3 months, provided, or what?
No. So she is living in a house, and that's her primary residence, right. And she can rent, she can operate a short-term rental out of her house lives 365 days a year.
But not that other house.
The other house, there is no primary residence, and what we're interested in reserving and making sure that those residences are used for long-term Portlanders.
Okay. Thank you for that clarification.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. So further discussion on this package, and then we'll take an action to put that on the table and then move on to the next. So roll call on this set of amendments.
Saltzman?
Aye.
Novick?
Aye.
Fritz?
Aye.
Fish?
Aye.
Hales?
Aye. Okay, so those are on the table. So now let's take up the next issue.
I think you just voted to adopt these amendments.
We did.
Okay.
Sorry.
I thought you were going to save those and circle back.
I was assuming we were going to approve these amendments,
okay.
Conduct the hearing, and then we're going to vote on the final package on the 23rd, right?
Right.
Okay.
Right.
We just voted to put them on the table.
Yeah.
All right.
So sorry if I'm tangling us up.
So I think the difference is you just voted to take the package from the Planning Commission and amend it.
Yes.
And then you'll hear testimony versus what we thought we were saying is that we would put them on the table, you'd hear testimony, and then you would vote on the amendments.
But I think that's the sense of the council is that we are going to take testimony.
Yeah,
we're
going to take testimony.
Aren't
so I'm
wedded
sorry,
to what we just
the
put
distinction,
on the table.
But not a difference.
Right.
All right. Let's do the next one the same way.
Just as well.
Yeah, maybe better. All right. So. Sandra, let's take the next issue, which is the multifamily issue.
So I believe there's been some discussion about whether a motion you wanted to provide, someone wanted to make a motion to allow the accessory short-term rentals in multi-dwelling units.
Right. So I'll move that amendment, which is to allow short-term rental use in multifamily residents under certain conditions, which are that the permit be signed by the resident and the property owner, or if there's a homeowners association, by the homeowners association.
And just to clarify, this was not discussed at the, I mean, you discussed it at the work session, but you sent us away without without drafting any code amendments for it.
You have copies of the amendment?
I'm sorry, I thought this was in the memo.
No, I don't have copies of that amendment.
Let's get paper copies of that amendment, please. So, Susan, can you get that?
I'll certainly second it for purposes of discussion.
So there hasn't been any code language written on it, so the notion is just, you know, allowing this for multi-dwelling structures also. That's the amendment.
All right. So we had quite a discussion about this at the work session.
Mm-hmm.
So the question is, do we allow this use in multifamily units at all?
Mm-hmm.
If we do, do we turn on what the state building code says, or do we turn on our own definitions? It turns out we're not particularly bound by the state building code. But the critical question is this a legal use in the landlord-tenant agreement between the rental owner and the tenant, or between the homeowners association that has jurisdiction over a condo and the resident of the condominium who owns their unit but is a member of the homeowners association. So the proposal here is to say, yes, you can operate a short-term rental unit. You can rent out a bedroom in your unit that you live in as a primary residence if you have the permission of your landlord, if you're a renter, or of your homeowners association if you're a condominium residence. So in a sense, it's doing for multifamily units what we're doing for single family with this proposal overall, which is trying to legalize what's already going on in a way that's sensible and that also respects the landlord-tenant relationship that exists between the owner of the building and the people that live there. So that's the philosophy behind this.
Under the amendment that you're offering, whose job would it be to verify that the arrangement had the blessing of the homeowner association or the landlord?
Well, in every case, our permittee is the person that we're dealing with. Somebody is coming in and applying for a permit to do this, and they would need to provide documentation that they have their landlord's permission or their homeowners association's permission to do this.
So our thinking, as this discussion has been going on, we've also been developing the application materials because this is informing, you know, what it is that we want to communicate with the public when they come in for their permit. So the idea is that the resident would be the person coming in for the permit. If they aren't the owner of the property, then they also need to get the property owner's signature. And if they're in a condominium, for example, and there's also a homeowners association, then the president of the homeowners association would need to sign also.
And Sandra, remind me what the notification on single-family residences is, neighborhood notification.
So the neighborhood notification for single-family is for properties abutting the property.
Yeah.
It's also to recognize organizations, and I think that's it. So and the property owner, too. But now we've covered the property owner with the signature.
So what's the proposed notification, Mayor, in multifamily, the adjacent residences or the floor or everybody in the building?
The same provision applies, right? It's adjacency.
So we haven't quite figured that out yet. If this motion, you know, passes, I think we're going to have to deliberate and figure out what's most logical. If it's the homeowners association, I think we can all imagine a big condominium building. That's probably sufficient. If you're a triplex on a site, maybe it needs to be to abutting properties.
But what if you're just renting and there isn't a homeowners association? Do you notify the adjacent apartments or the adjacent homes around the apartment complex? What's your intent, Mayor?
Good question. Our intent is to allow this and then figure out those details, at least if we have to in code or if not in rule, in terms of what they require in the permit.
Right.
Can I ask just a related question?
Mm-hmm.
To what extent has the Planning Commission worked through the issues of multifamily structures during its deliberations? So what's the extent of the record we have on this issue, pro and con?
Yeah. So let me give you a little history of what happened. When we started with this project, we were approaching it from a zoning perspective. So we were saying, should this be allowed in residential zones, both single-dwelling and multi-dwelling zones, and single-dwelling and multi-dwelling development? Our proposal that came out from staff to the community in our discussion draft in January, including allowing it in multi-dwelling structures. After we talked to the community for about 7 weeks, this issue really didn't come up very much. I think most of the testimony we heard and the feedback we got from the public was really related to single dwelling, similar to what you heard at your last hearing. When we started exploring the inspections option, we started getting into this issue of which building code is it inspected under and what would we be inspecting for each one of them. And we discovered that, indeed, it requires a change of occupancy from an apartment, R2 occupancy, to a hotel occupancy, R1, that we discussed at the work session. At that time, we felt that coupled with the property owners and condo associations, most of them not allowing them and sublets not being allowed to regular leases, we abandoned that train of thought. So by the time we proposed something to the Planning Commission, that was not part of the proposal. So we discussed it, but pretty briefly with the Planning Commission, because that was off the table at the time.
So, Mayor, your amendment says beginning January 1. So I take it the 6 months are designed to work out some of these details.
Exactly.
The one nuance I would offer just for our consideration is this says we're going to do it and we're going to spend 6 months figuring it out. I wonder whether there isn't an equally plausible approach, which is to say will take 6 months to figure out whether we can do it and then come back to council and take it up rather than declaring we're going to do something for which we don't really have much of a record.
Well, yeah, this gets to a philosophical question, I think, about the Planning Commission, too. We're not an appellate body for the Planning Commission. In my opinion, what the Planning Commission should always do is get things to the 90% point. They're an advisory body to the City Council, and we ask them as volunteers to do a heck of a lot of work, and we appreciate it. But I don't expect them to figure out every planning and zoning issue to the last degree, and that all we have to do is either approve their work or send it back. Again, we're not an appellate body for them. They are an advisory body to us. So they took up a lot of issues in this RICAP package, including this one. They did a lot of work on them. And as Sandra's described, they didn't spend a lot of time on the multifamily issue, but it's certainly come up in our deliberations. Frankly, I think they're important judgment calls in this question, and there are details to figure out. But this is not one of the most complicated issues that we face in the zoning code. It's, are we going to allow short-term rentals in multifamily units as a land use or not? And then are we going to have reasonable permit requirements, and what should they be? The second part we're welcome to spend more time on after we deal with the zoning code issue, which is what's in front of us now. We also want to give the multifamily industry a chance to be able to communicate with their members and say, okay, this is becoming legal in the city of Portland. It's happening now, but it's becoming legal, and here's how you proceed if you want to allow your unit owners or in your condo or your residents in your apartment to participate in this program by getting a permit to use a bedroom in their unit this way.
So just to offer a slightly different view of the same issue, I think the process here has been exemplary. We've had a work session, two public hearings. BPS has given us briefing materials. So I think from that point of view, this has been a great process on an issue which actually, from my point of view, is more complicated than I thought going in. I mean, I think there, and more I've read about other cities grappling with this, I realize that there's all kinds of unanticipated consequences and other things. So I appreciate the thought and care. I will tell you from, just speaking for myself, the issues and cluster of issues around multifamily housing, to me, feel like not just a subset of what we're looking at, but an entirely different set of issues, which, in fairness, have not been given much of a hearing at the commission level and tangentially have come to us. But even in the conversations I've had with advocates outside of this proceeding, the constant refrain I'm getting is we don't know how to approach this particular subject. This is a different matter. So from my point of view, taking additional time to get that right and doing it not by us, but having the commission do it and creating a record would be more beneficial for me as a decision maker than shoehorning it into this discussion, because I don't actually feel that we have an adequate record to make these judgments. And we can spend the time ironing these out maybe over the next 6 months, but I'm not sure I want to signal that we're going to do it until I have a clearer sense of whether we can do it and should do it. And those are different questions. And I'm saying that I'm giving the as strong endorsement as I can to the process to date on single family. But I think the multifamily thing to me is a hornet's nest. And what's the standards that the buildings have to be brought up to? What are some of the experiences in other cities? What does it mean to get landlord permission? I mean, that to me is an invitation to a whole level of fraud. I mean, who's the landlord? How do you verify it's that person's signature? Is a landlord likely to give approval? How have other cities dealt with that? So I appreciate the urgency that your amendment suggests, but I would say why not kick it to a process for 6 months and have it come back to council for further consideration? So that's just...
Yeah, well, I understand the point, but again, it's philosophical. We have a lot of work we want the Planning Commission to do. It's our code. We adopt it. They make recommendations to us. They made a bunch of them to us in this case. The other factor for me in impelling me to try to do something now is people are already doing this.
Oh, but that, well, as a mother, that has never been a compelling argument to me.
No, but they're already doing it. So it might behoove us to catch up to what's happening in the marketplace.
Yeah, Mayor, but just so we're clear, under that theory, we should just start taxing prostitution. It's also illegal. And
well,
it's
come on.
But no, I'm saying there's lots of activity in our community that's not legal. We're not taking a punitive hand on this. But the idea that we should get revenue before we've thought it through, I don't think it's the right approach.
Well, I'm sure that lots of folks have come to testify, so maybe we could take testimony first.
Let's hear from people about this.
I also want to hear from the city attorney as to whether you've looked into this proposed amendment with regard to landlord-tenant law and definition of hotel and vacation rentals and such. So I'll just put that out there, and that's a concern that I have.
Okay. So do we want to put this amendment on the table or not? I'll move it.
Yes. A second.
Okay. All right. Further discussion? So roll call on putting this amendment on the table as well.
Saltzman?
Aye.
Novick?
I have a number of questions about this issue that I hope we can explore, but I will vote to put it on the table. Aye.
Fritz?
I can't imagine that I'm going to be persuaded in this afternoon's testimony that this is a good thing to do. I understand that we will be hearing testimony, so I appreciate that, but just to be clear, I don't think this is a good thing to do, so no.
Fish?
No.
Hales?
Aye. Okay, that's that one. And what else do we have? Maybe nothing? All right. Anything left for us in terms of amendments? I don't think so.
Actually, Eric, there's one thing that it sort of actually, like Sandra's suggestion, as to whether it makes sense to offer it as an amendment here. One of the things we heard in testimony before from Mr. Unger of the Lion and Rose was that one of the conditions of receiving a permit should be that you agree that in your advertising you list the permit number. And I think that was an excellent idea, and I have no idea procedurally where it should be. But if it would make sense to have that offered as an amendment here, then I would like to offer it.
And I'd second it.
Yeah, let's take up the question of whether that needs to be an amendment or whether that's a permit condition. In other words, I'm still unclear on the boundary between what we have to put into the zoning code and what we can require as a condition of a permit. Again, we're dealing with a permittee. Whether if we approve this whole package, permittee might be a single family homeowner or it might be somebody who lives in a condo. They have an obligation to get the permit. And then we can require them to display their license or their permit number in their advertising. Mm-hmm. We have the legal authority to do that. The question is, do we need to put that into the zoning code, or is there some other way to do it?
So I think there's two options. It sounds like if you wanted to proceed and you think this is a good idea, we could just put it in the application materials and tell people best practice is for you to put your license number on all advertisement. That would be kind of an informal way of communicating that information. We wouldn't be enforcing on that information because it's not in one of our city codes. If we wanted to codify it so that we are actually doing enforcement on it, we would. And I've been talking to Scott Carter from the Revenue Bureau. Terry Williams wasn't able to be with us today, about putting it in Title VI, which is one of the Revenue Bureau's titles, and it would be kind of more akin to what they have in their titles with business license, et cetera. We certainly don't want to make it a land use decision that someone's appealing and, you know, taking to Luba because, you know, they didn't advertise properly. We don't really regulate advertising through the zoning code.
Well, help us out here, maybe you and Catherine, and that is we have a number of conditions that we apply to a permit. If you're remodeling your kitchen, you have to post your permit on the outside of the structure so that the building inspector can see it. I don't think that's in code, right? Or maybe it is. If those things are in code, then we should put this in code.
Imagine that's in the building code.
It is in code. Okay, so if those things are typically in code and you don't have, you, the Bureau, don't have a lot of administrative rulemaking authority here to do this on your own, then I would be inclined to put it in the code, take action on your amendment, put that on the table for what we do in terms of the zoning code, right?
Put it into Title VI.
In Title VI. So it would be code, but a different city
title.
Six.
Okay. Mm-hmm. So
And Steve, would you again just explain the scope of what you're proposing?
The requirement would be that as a condition of receiving a permit to operate one of these short-term rentals, the applicant has to agree to list the permit number in any and all advertisements.
Okay, so that's a motion. That's a second. Further discussion on that, putting that motion on the table? Roll call.
Saltzman?
Aye.
Novick?
Aye.
Fritz?
Aye.
Fish?
Aye.
Hales?
Aye. Done. Okay. Anything else? All right. Thank you, Sandra.
Sandra, the format you gave it to us again this time, which was a chart that had the options, we could check the box and
yes.
see it. I'm tempted to move that we make this mandatory for every complex issue comes before council, but what we'd be doing is just taking what BPS has pioneered and applied to everyone else. Just thank you for the way you organize the material.
We highly recommend you do that.
And tell them where they learned it from, yes. All right, thank you very much. All right, so let's take testimony again. We have some people that signed up for the previous hearing. We're going to give them the first opportunity and then move on to everyone else. We're going to ask you to keep your comments to 2 minutes. Obviously, there are a lot of people that would like to speak. If somebody else has repeated your, or has already iterated your testimony and you'd like to waive your opportunity and let others proceed, do so. If you agree with somebody and want to just show a sign of that, wave your hand. We ask that you keep vocal demonstrations to other places than the council chambers. So, again, let's try to move this along, but hear from everyone if at all possible.
Okay. We have a total of 41 speakers who've requested. And the first three, please come on up, are Maggie Chandler, Carrie Wynn, and Peter Ovington.
Come on
and
up.
They will be followed by Nathan Tabor, Jason Miner, and Mr. Lightning.
Good afternoon.
Afternoon.
Go ahead.
I'm going to start. Yes, I'm Maggie, and I would like to thank the Bureau of Planning and Sustainability and all of you for what I see a really earnest effort to sort this out. Thanks so much. I just want to reiterate what my situation is, so maybe you can see that I'm a little bit typical of a lot of the people who are benefiting from this. I moved here, retired here 5 years ago to be with my kids and grandkids. As you know, it's pretty expensive to live in Portland, and I'm able to live 3 minutes from my kids. But I do need to a little extra income. I'm on a fixed retirement, and this is the way that I do, to make ends meet. And not only that, but Airbnb has allowed me the flexibility to be involved with my grandchildren and to participate fully in the rich retirement that's available in this city. I paddle, by the way, with the senior group. And also, it's allowed me just that little bit of extra money so I can go visit my grandchildren in the other state south of here every couple, few months. And this year, because of Airbnb, I was able to take my first trip in retirement, and I went to Hawaii. So, I mean, that's just a kind of a common story, but I think it's pretty typical of those of us who are doing. I rent my guest room and the adjacent bathroom. And it's just a little walking around money. So I hope we can, and maybe even separate these. Could we just get approval for that first proposal and then look at the multiple family dwelling?
Okay, great. Thank you.
Thank you.
Thanks very much. Afternoon.
Honorable members of Portland City Council, my name is Carrie Wynn. In the spirit of placemaking and the philosophical intent of shared cities, the 30-day criterion differentiating lodger versus renter is outdated. We need a new definition as to not obstruct the efficacy of the invisible hand. Yes to safety equally for all Portland renters. Just this month, my neighbor sold his duplex. His tenants referred to him as an absentee landlord who, while providing affordable housing, never fixed anything. The electrical inspector told the buyer that it was one of the most hazardous situations he has encountered. Not only were my long-term renting neighbors at risk, my home was at risk if fire had erupted. If safety is the goal, make inspection mandatory for every rental situation. Neighbors will always jeopardize the health and well-being of other neighbors. It is impossible to legislate away this potentiality. That said, I implore your good reasoning to relinquish the onerous requirement for neighbor notification. My neighbors can bring anyone into their home for any duration without notifying me. The distinguishing element is that my guest contributes to my mortgage. All other points of contention stand. Their overnight guests are as subject to the chance dangers of emergency egress as my neighbors may be subject to my guest's behavior. Micro-lodging exists in the same vein as food carts, which prosper alongside their restaurant counterpart. We need policy that supports the creative autonomy of Portlanders and grows micro-enterprise, which is the nutrient base of a healthy local living economy. No one likes being disrupted, yet disruptive technology plays a huge part in long-term economic sustainability. Our position as policymakers should not be to protect the interests of established business from competition, but to steadfastly ensure that our economy has a capacity to resiliently respond to emerging market demands. I regard your visionary leadership. Thank you.
Thank you. Thank you very much. Good afternoon.
Good afternoon, Mayor and Commissioners. My name is Peter Ovington. I've been a resident of Portland for the last 15 years and have lived in a condo in Northeast in the King neighborhood for the last 7 years. I support home sharing in Portland and more regulatory certainty for everybody. I attended your last hearing on this topic and really appreciated your thoughtful consideration and the spirit of creative problem solving that you showed then and also today. First, I believe apartments and condos should be allowed to participate in short-term rentals. They make up a big portion of our housing stock. Limiting multifamily rentals, in my view, is classist because it provides short-term rental income only to single-family homeowners who are already more well-off than the rest of us, given the way that property values are rising. So I believe it's an equity issue. Secondly, not all apartments and condos are created equally, in terms of their building access and layout. I own a unit in a one-story courtyard condo with a total of 12 units. It's a ground floor end unit, what the British might call semi-detached. In terms of life safety, it has two obvious visible exits that lead directly outside. As a proud Portland progressive, I never thought I'd use these words, but trying to regulate who can come and go from my condo feels a bit like government overreach and an intrusion on my private property rights. Third, I oppose the primary residence requirement, particularly the notion of increasing it from 6 to 9 months per year. And lastly, I just wanted to say that the notion of stranger danger has been exaggerated by some neighborhood activists. I think you heard enough at the last meeting about how well guests are vetted. Most of my guests have actually been single women, grandmothers visiting from out of state, and the like. So, again, those of us home sharing on Airbnb and other sites are really Portland's ambassadors hosting short-term visitors, and I just want to thank you for working to bring Portland into the sharing economy.
So let me react to your characterization of the distinction between single-family and multifamily as being classist. And you're entitled to your view, obviously, but there is one profound difference that we have in the record before us. It's just we're struggling with. Currently, all of these short-term rentals are illegal. But a owner of a house can agree to rent out his or her space and not violate a covenant. There virtually every rental agreement that I've seen and virtually every rule of a condo association prohibits this. So there's a separate piece that we have to be aware of here. Plus, there are building code issues unique to multifamily and single family. The mayor and I'm not opposed to considering this issue. I might have a difference agreement with the mayor about the process, the sequence, but not to considering it. Mm-hmm. But I think to leap to say it's classist when they are, in my view, just in my opinion, completely distinct pieces of the shared economy is a bit harsh, but I offer that for your consideration.
I guess I'm in the unique position maybe of having a condo unit that acts a little bit like a single family home because my guests use a separate entrance, and they actually don't step foot on what's called the general common element of the condo property. So I don't know that you want to get into that much detail if you're thinking of multifamily, but for me it would certainly be helpful.
Thank you. Thank you all.
Thank you.
The next three are Nathan Tabor, Jason Miner, and Mr. Lightning. They'll be followed by Marianne Schwab, Bill Gregg, and Steve Unger.
Mayor Hales, members of the council, my name is Jason Miner. I'm the executive director of 1000 Friends of Oregon. Thanks for the opportunity to testify today. I sent a letter after the first hearing outlining four principles, getting to that question of philosophy that I think should guide your decision today. And I want to get straight to the number three and number four principles that were in that letter because I think they address the issue of extending this policy to rentals and condominiums. And they were that our planning code should encourage access to prosperity, not deny it. I think there's a traditional model of building wealth in a home, and that's single-family home ownership. And it's been, as pointed out at the last hearing, the primary source of wealth for many Portlanders. But there's a new model of building wealth that you heard a lot about at the last meeting, and that is sharing your greatest asset with people who come to Portland. And I think that it should extend to people in rental units and condominiums as well, many of them trying to build wealth just as anybody in a single-family house is. And the fourth principle that I outline, and I think it's critically important and gets, again, to the question of philosophy, is you have the opportunity to make the sharing economy a more equitable economy than the traditional economy. And I think that, too, poses the challenge and the question of, should we draw a hard line between one style of residence, one style of home, and another style of home? And this policy clearly does that. That's why I encourage that the step taken today should actually be to adopt the amendment and work over the next 6 months as to the details that line it out. Specifically, there are mechanisms in place for landlords and homeowners associations to prevent this from happening in condos and apartments that they currently own. What doesn't currently exist is a place for a landlord or a homeowners association or a renter to take advantage of this benefit, the benefit that the city council is looking to pass, and that's the umbrella that you would provide by accepting the amendment. And lastly, I'd just like to emphasize that in a city in which we are trying so hard to encourage multifamily development and people taking advantage of our corridors and town centers, I would encourage you to consider adopting the amendment and considering multifamily units on parity with single-family homeownership. Thanks.
Thank you. Afternoon.
Hi. Thank you very much for seeing us. My name is Nathan Tabor. I live in Southeast. Things have changed since I wrote a letter to you guys last week. The multifamily thing, I guess, is being taken another look at. I just wanted to say, you know, my prime concern is I would not be able to rent out a spare room in my condo. I am there 95% of the time. I'm with people who come to my home and share my neighborhood and add to the community, as far as I'm concerned. It's alarming to me that even though I pay my income tax from Airbnb, I pay Portland's staggering property tax rates, and then also travelers are now getting taxed, or they will, that I'm being treated like a non-property owner. It just seems like I shouldn't be lumped in with apartment owners when in every other facet I'm not treated the same. You know, where I live, there are no hotels. So, you know, a lot of people I know wouldn't be coming to Portland if they couldn't stay, you know, near Reed or near friends and family, or if they had to pay $300 a night to stay downtown. They wouldn't bring their money here. And this helps me. I mean, it helps the community. It helps the coffee shop around the corner, the breakfast joint I send them to every morning. And it just, I don't know, it really, I think it helps the community, especially as the Southeast changes in demographic and becomes more of a city center kind of area. You know, I don't want to rehash things that people are going to say over and over again. So, you know, I sent you a letter last week. Hopefully you guys get a chance to read it, and it's kind of all I have to say.
Thank you. Thanks very much. Afternoon, Lightning.
My name is Lightning. I represent Lightning Think Lab. I find it interesting on the multifamily, how many landlords, if say you have a 50-unit apartment building, is going to want a bunch of people coming in and out of units that you've rented to maybe one or two people upon your lease. There's going to have to be some type of an incentive for a landlord to do that. The liability is going to be tremendous on having more people coming in and out of his building on a regular basis. So him agreeing to that is almost going to be zero. Another issue I have is on Airbnb is that we always hear Airbnb. I don't have a problem with these short-term rentals. I do have a concern with some people who want to, what they consider, maintain the character of their neighborhoods, don't have kind of a hotel-type, motel-type situation in their residential neighborhoods. I understand their position, and I respect their opinions. One of the concerns I have is I don't want to see a monopoly by one company like Airbnb. We're talking shared economy. Why don't we start talking some of the local property management companies, and they have the ability to create software systems. They have the ability to use the internet. And why don't we compete against Airbnb and take care of some of the residents in Portland? Because all I'm hearing is Airbnb, and I'd like to hear some other companies. We're talking shared economy. Let's get some other companies coming in and competing with Airbnb, and let's make this thing happen, and let's get some lodging tax going toward the city. But let's get the real competition going against Airbnb. I don't see anything about Airbnb that's incredible. They're a company that has probably virtually no assets. They're $10 billion net worth. I find that amazing that they do that, but why not? Is there other companies stepping in, local companies that are competing against Airbnb on the situation? And the hotel industry must be up in arms on this, because obviously that's directly affecting their businesses, and it will decrease their revenue base. Thank you.
Thank you. Thanks very much. Okay.
Next three are Marianne Schwab, Bill Gregg, and Steve Unger. And they'll be followed by Gary Cash, Matt Curtis, and Cliff Johnson.
Marianne can go.
Good afternoon. I think you're on first, Marianne.
Thank you. Good afternoon, Mayor and Commissioners. I agree with Commissioners.
None of us is running for that office. So we
start over again.
Are there announcements here that I haven't heard?
Start that 3-minute clock again, please.
Two-second
clock. Okay. I agree with Commissioner Dan Salzman. It's time we put these short-term rental businesses into the light. And to that, I would add, on so many levels, the city collecting the 11.5 hotel tax, businesses paying income taxes, and I'm talking short-term businesses, and the immediate neighbor's right to a restful night's sleep between 10 o'clock and 7 in the morning. Right now, our city noise ordinance has no tool to monitor or put fines out. I'm pleased that Airbnb is setting the bar high for the Portland B&B 1-2-bedroom short-term rental 24/7 commercial businesses by posting the inspector's numbers online, and I'd like to see them add to the houses. When we were in Austria last September, every guest house had their buildings inspected, and they were posted guest house. And also, by facilitating collection of the 11.5 hotel tax, I know Terry Williams is tracking that, and hopefully to ensure their clients pay their shared economy, the rental income with IRS, sending the 1099 forms for their clients. On a side note, when our children were making 12% interest at Ben Franklin, we had to pay the taxes on that income. And again, we need to bring this to the light. And as for opening up our apartments and our multifamily condos, those I picture along Division, Hawthorne, Belmont, to have strangers coming and going, I don't think is a public safety. It's not shared economy. It's protecting those. They've signed the contract. They've been interviewed. Managers have approved their circumstance financially to go into that unit. They've signed a note saying they know they'd be quiet from 10 o'clock to 7 in the morning. That's a safe house. And one little thing I'd like to add out, the highest number of registered pedophiles in the state of Oregon happens to live in 97214. And how do we vent that? How do we vent bedbugs? Who does the laundry? There's lots of issues. I would have preferred that this be taken off the table and thoroughly vented as suggested by Southeast Uplift. Thank you.
Thank you. Afternoon.
Bill Gregg, Buckman Neighborhood. I'm for like a 9-month requirement for residency, and I'm wondering, are they going to be allowed to rent out their two rooms during the time that they're not there without a host, sort of as what could effectively be a whole house rental? Secondly, if council rightfully chooses to not allow apartments in whole unhosted houses, will Airbnb, who has spent tons of money to lobby the city, also be taking these listings down from their site in Portland? Or will they do as they always have, using a catch-me-as-you-can, if-you-can way of doing business? Short-term rentals have been hyped by the PR department of Airbnb as being part of a new sharing economy. There was a site before Airbnb called Couchsurfing, where people would actually have people staying there without any kind of monetary interest. And this was true sharing. I have a problem seeing that that a commercial transaction between two parties facilitated by a huge soon-to-be public company now worth $10 billion, with them taking a fee on each transaction, how that has anything to do with sharing. Finally, in conclusion, as a businessman, I was always been surprised at the efforts to reduce the amount of compliance needed to become a short-term rental. The lower barrier to entry that exists, the easier for more and more people to be doing this. With a finite amount of business out there, especially in the non-summer months, available business that will be there will be split amongst a larger and larger number of hosts. This may benefit Airbnb, but not the individual host. Thank you.
Thank you. Good afternoon, Steve.
Hi. So first I wanted to say that personally I support Airbnb private room host resident rentals. I use it when I travel to visit our kids and grandkids in Salt Lake. It's a huge value. Second, I'd like to say, from a policy perspective, I think that the three issues are limited commercial use of residential property, of maintaining the rental housing stock, and of having ordinance enforceability. And about the limited commercial use, what I would say is when we got our bed and breakfast, well, we have a conditional use permit, BDS just told me that because we made limited commercial use of a residential property, we would be subject to limitations and restrictions that regular homeowners weren't subject to. And I just accepted that. And I think that this is partly what's going on here, and this is why homeowners who do make limited commercial use of residential properties have to take some reasonable amount of extra things that a regular homeowner doesn't. Also, I was very pleased about the license number requirement getting some positive review. And I think that this can only do good. It really can't do harm. Regarding this host residency, I beat my brain on this problem a lot. And I came up with this idea that if you said a host has to be resident, and what that means is be present on the property 4 hours a day, even if it was when they were sleeping. So there's a host, have to be on the property 4 hours a day, could be while they're sleeping. And then you said 30 days a year they could be absent if they gave their neighbors notice. This would allow them, Airbnb hosts, to go away on vacation 30 days a year and rent their property. They could rent it all year as a private room rental when a host was present 4 hours a day. The last thing is about enforceability, and that has to do with the idea that a complaint-driven system won't protect the rental stock. A complaint-driven system can work if a neighbor has a problem about noise, parking problems, nuisance. But a neighbor will not call BDS compliance hotline and say a unit was removed from the rental stock. And when BDS or BPNS says, well, just leave it be complaint-driven, that won't work as a way of ensuring rental properties maintain themselves. And then I would just say, I've always felt you need a phase two. I always put apartments and condos in phase two. And then we need a vacation rental ordinance for unsupervised vacation rentals. And I would urge you basically to hire a planner for a year, have them review 20 ordinances from around the country and draft an ordinance for Portland. The first year that ordinance was in effect, the return on investment would probably be about 300% from lodging tax. I would rather have all these rentals regulated appropriately than operating illegally.
Thank you. Thanks very much.
Thank you.
Thank you all.
The next three are Gary Cash, Matt Curtis, and Cliff Johnson, and they'll be followed by Mike Kirk, Eric Schmidt, and Diane Henderson.
Good afternoon. Who's first?
Good afternoon. Gary?
I'm Gary Cash.
Okay.
Hi.
Welcome.
Pretty simple guy, pretty simple little spiel here, and that's that Airbnb has really given me a chance at life after some pretty hard events. In October, when I heard about Airbnb, it was at the end of my unemployment. I was at the end of my COBRA insurance. I had given up my professional career as a clinical director at a health clinic to take care of my then dying partner, who was dying of stage 4 cancer. So he passed away 2 months later. There was no health insurance or anything, and I tried. I have a master's degree in education. I couldn't find anything to support my mortgage. And when it all seemed like it was just done, I learned about Airbnb. At the same time, I moved my father, who had been homeless for 10 years, and it took me 7 years to find him. I moved him in with me. Same month, I opened my first room and took my first guest. And then my father developed dementia. So 7 months later, Airbnb has allowed me to keep my house, has allowed me to get caught up on my mortgage. I'm home every day to take care of my father, every day. And also, my late partner was a landscaper, and he had one dream, and that